This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
No mai haere mai, kia ora, hello and welcome to Backchat with James King on Free FM. This is your weekly discussion show talking about local, national and international issues. If you'd like to be part of the program, join me on email jamesking2020@gmail.com. I'd love to have your feedback, your comments, your questions, your criticisms and of course your observations. Today on the show we discuss everything related to men's health, from mental, physical, emotional and spiritual well-being. We talk with Chris Hennessy, husband, father of three sons, and GM of McNaughton Windows and Doors. We also speak with our resident health expert and senior Māori academic at AUT, Dr. Alexander Stevens II. Well, hello and welcome and happy Matariki, boys.
Yeah. Ata Māori, James, it's good to be back. Happy Matariki, or Pōanga, as we like to say up north.
Yeah, Bula.
Before we start, what does Matariki mean to you guys? Alexander.
Sure. So, like I said, you know, up north we celebrate Pōanga, which is one of the key stars, because we don't see every other star in relation to Matariki. So Pōanga is the main one. I guess for me, it's beautiful to see our Indigenous practices being revitalised in a bigger audience setting, and being able to identify our way of being as being legitimate.
Well, it's
in their own right.
It's really taken off in terms of popularity and, isn't it?
Yeah, Chris? Definitely. Yeah, for me, I love seeing the kids being able to celebrate it, particularly my boys. They got up with their school, they got up early and had a breakfast and saw the sunrise, and I thought that was lovely, and all the different activities. Yeah, my kids are Māori through my wife, and I think it's beautiful they get their culture celebrated more and more.
I mean, one of the things, James, that I think about in this country, because we are diverse, and if people are goal-setting or wanting to set themselves some new inspiration, I think if you can't do it in the traditional Gregorian calendar, then aim for Chinese New Year. If you can't do Chinese New Year, do Diwali. And if you can't do Diwali, do Matariki. There's four examples of New Year's that you can set new goals, new parameters, new directions.
Well, and so long as it's positive.
Yes. Yeah. And it's proving to be, right?
Yeah, right. The whole idea of this Renaissance, this Māori Renaissance, is quite incredible, really, and it shows you how out of step some of our politicians are with the rest of the community, where it is being embraced, Māori culture, and so on. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think the fact that you can hear sirens in the background, which isn't your side of, you know, sound effects, it's literally on the road outside, might indicate that. I mean, as you know, James, I'm far from, you know, being diplomatic and reserved, but I think that what we're seeing is a great example for other Indigenous communities internationally that do tend to look at Māori and wonder how they can also position themselves to reintroduce their own practices and customs so that other people in their countries can celebrate with them.
I spoke to someone the other day who's an astronomer, and he said that there was no real scientific significance of Matariki, so why bother celebrating it? Which proves the disconnect. This guy's the older generation.
Sure.
And there's that disconnect there.
Yeah. But then I would also argue from, and I guess this is the thing, right, we all hold different lenses and different worldviews, so sure, he might argue from a scientific perspective that it has no meaning, but then what lacks, from my perspective anyway, when you look at it, say, culturally or
historically,
sociologically speaking, of course it has significance. It's about seeing stars that you wouldn't traditionally see. And if you remember, the whole point of it is this idea of coming together, that you've made it in another season or another year, if you look, time and space, which is is spa. Space and the ra, of course, is another day. So I think from my perspective, I do think it is times to sit back, reflect, which is what I've been doing, those that have come, those that we've yet to meet, and those that are still here with us in the now.
In the now. Thank you for that. I wanted to know about Matariki and what it means to the peer of you. I should start with you, Chris, by asking what's your background by way of introduction?
So professionally, yeah, like you mentioned, I'm the general manager of a window and door supplier, so we're in the construction industry. I'm just about 2 decades, actually, in that company and in that role.
You don't look old enough.
Well, I started there straight out of high school, so
it's been
an awesome journey to get to this point. And, I'm really, I guess, yeah, proud to have been with this one company and having come in as a young apprentice straight out of high school,
sure,
not knowing anything about the trade, and then having worked my way through. I'm just so grateful for the company and the people that have supported me, particularly my family and all the people involved to get to where I am. So professionally, it's been a really awesome journey.
You're the general manager?
Yes, correct.
How long have you been the general manager for?
So that's just been announced recently. However, over the last several years, I've been transitioning to that. And
so you were always part of their succession plan? Do I take that to be correct?
I believe so, yeah. And I had ambitions around that as well. I've been on the leadership team there for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So, that professionally, that's what I'm involved with. And, it's a really awesome role. I really enjoy it. And personally, I love being a dad of 3 boys.
3 boys. Yeah. How's that?
I love it actually. Right. Like I learn a lot off them too. Like, you know, sure, for me, I never knew my dad, and so I don't think it's any coincidence that I've been blessed with 3 boys.
Yes.
Learning the ropes of fatherhood through them, and I love my kids. I love who they are, who they're going to be, who they are in this season. And, you know, when my wife and I reflect, we just try and really be present in the season we're in, which is, you know, we're celebrating Matsuriki, which is, you know, a time of reflection, a time of, you know, a change of season, and I think that's quite fitting, you know.
Yeah. Well, crikey, you've got it all. You've got a good job, you've got a loving wife,
yeah,
got 3 boys.
Mm.
That's the dream, isn't it? Isn't that the dream, living the dream?
Yeah, I guess it is, actually. I kind of pinch myself some days, and I'm pretty grateful. And obviously, this doesn't come without challenges. However, I'm just so grateful, particularly between my wife and I, from what we've come from to what we've been blessed with and had the opportunity to create. Like, it's just, it's surreal at times.
Mm.
Yeah.
And do you have an interest in health and well-being?
Yeah, definitely, physically, I've always loved sports and, I guess, exercise or training and things of that nature since I was young. Overall well-being, I think, is really important.
Yeah.
That's, you know, something that Alexandra and I connected on, really. Men's health and men's well-being, and not just physical, but mental, emotional, psychological, spiritual. They all affect each other.
Mm.
And I think having a holistic view on that is really important. And it's good in this day and age, it's talked about even.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. I was going to say, I think it's really tempting sometimes that we kind of cut off these different segments, but they actually all overflow and
interconnect. They link together, don't they?
Yeah, with each other.
Mm.
And one thing just to add to that, you know, getting the opportunity to instill that in my boys, I think is a real privilege and one of the highest honours and callings.
Really. Gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So you take fitness to the extreme, don't you, with CrossFit? You know, it's not for the faint-hearted. That's some hard mahi right there.
Yeah.
And do you enjoy it?
Well, it's not for the fainted, and it's not like those with me with heart failure, right? So go for gold, Chris. This is your part to promote the sport.
No, I picked that up a couple of years ago, and, I really enjoyed. Actually, one of the cool things about CrossFit is the community. Like, you do it as a group and a community, and you build these real cool connections and with a healthy commonality around fitness. And, you know, you create goals and you work towards competitions. And, it's a cool outlet for me, my own self-care and therapy. Yeah, yeah. So there's that as well. And, even my boys, I think it's important for them to see that that's a normal part of life, to exercise. Mm. To try and eat sensibly, all those things. Hopefully some things are caught and some things are taught. And I think hopefully they catch that idea coming up in an environment where that's normal. Mm.
It's interesting because my brother, one of my brothers, got me into walking when I was in Auckland. I'm not a natural, as you probably find it difficult to believe, looking at me, I'm not a natural athlete. But he would have me walk up Mount Eden, and I'd swear and curse and carry on and mutter under my breath, heaving and grinding and like a three-legged elephant up Mount Eden, hating every minute of it, but getting back down the mountain to my home to sit down and go, actually, that wasn't too bad. I enjoyed that. I was a sense of achievement and a sense of... And as you say, with walking, there is a little bit of community, you know, similar to CrossFit, I suppose. There is walking groups and things like that. But, you know, are you a believer that that exercise produces endorphins and that type of thing? Do you feel better after exercising?
Oh, 100%. It's so satisfying. And it's not just about believing. The science backs it up. And, you know, you touched base there on a sense of achievement. I think that's you can't manufacture that, whether it's health and exercise or different areas of your life where you tangibly have achieved something. It's good for your overall well-being to have a sense of achievement. And I think, you know, when you think about programs like where teenagers, they look like teenagers have been through a bit of a rough time and they're looking to get them out of that funk, you know, you see things like Camp Adair where they have physical activities where they actually achieve something and it's tangible, they can grasp it and you can't deny that they achieve it. I think that's a really good thing. And it's really important for people to get that.
And for some individuals, James, especially those that say got depression and anxiety, exercise can be just as powerful, if not more so, than their medication when done on a daily basis.
Yes.
So as you know, in my practice, I try to do a combination therapy of antipsychotic medication plus other.
Yes.
And I think that you can't just solely rely on medication. It does a lot of good to us, but it can also take a lot out of us in terms of side effects.
Yes.
So things like exercise, for example, can be a really powerful way of topping up, you know, when we're feeling a bit low or flat, and actually just getting out in the environment. Like you, I'm a bit of a slow starter as well. Yet when I'm out and actually doing it, I'm fine. Yes. Sometimes just the thought you have to overcome.
Well, I was going to say, when you were talking there, that it's easier said than done. If you're in a state of depression, the last thing you want to do is go out and meet the world. You want to isolate, you want to stay... Well, this is my experience anyway. You want to stay at home, you want to... It's not the first thing you think about when you're depressed is doing some exercise.
No.
And really it should be.
Yeah. Whereas I often say that even if you're looking at the idea of exercise, small steps, you know, over long term equals big difference. So even if I'm working with my clients, say we're around this topic around men's health, even if it's just making your bed or brushing your teeth, you know, it really is the small things that you can then build up and do bigger things like going for a walk. Sometimes you're right, you know, asking them to do a walk when they're not in the right headspace isn't the best approach, so we start small and work our way out.
What do you think, Chris, what do you think are the most common misconceptions about men's health, and how do you address them in your work on personal life?
I think one common misconception that I've noticed is this assumption around men's sensitivity, that we're not sensitive. And you know, I've been in the industry that I'm in. It's the construction industry, and it's changing now, but it's very male dominated. So I've had a lot of years of observing and being involved with it, and you know, you see things like it's framed as like friendly banter, and you see apprentices come through, and there's almost this initiation around, I went through it, so you have to go through it.
Right.
There's all sorts of silly shenanigans that go on, and some of it's just downright bullying. And I sort of noticed it as I was coming through, and it does affect people and the culture of the team you're in and things of that nature, and I've seen it. And I think to think that we aren't sensitive to those things and how they affect us is not good.
I think you find those people who do the most bullying are the most sensitive people.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
You know, what would you say to that, Alexander?
Yeah, well, having both experienced bullying growing up as well as working with people who have been bullies themselves, many times haven't dealt with their own stuff. And therefore flow it out to everybody else. It's that te kore stuff that we often talk about in other shows, you know, that chaotic element.
Yes.
If people don't resolve their own te kore, their own chaos, then they'll tend to kind of flow it out for other people to experience.
Mm. Yeah. And what are the other misconceptions around men's health, do you think?
Yeah, I think a misconception is that we... I guess men don't... We're actually not very good at asking for our needs or asking to have our needs met.
Right.
And it even... Like, it can even sound weird framing it that way. But, you know...
Shouldn't be, though, right?
No, it shouldn't be, but...
But there is a perception.
But I guess I have my own personal experience with it myself. Like, you know, we... Even in my own marriage and stuff, I'm not great at communicating things I need. Mm. And, you know, I see it, I guess... And the work environment and the team I'm in, it's like, you know, you don't, you can see someone struggling or you can see, like, you can see a certain reaction to a certain situation. And then I think underneath all that stuff, there's a need that's not being met, is my experience, because that's when I reflect properly on why I behaved in certain ways in certain situations. Yeah. And I dig down deep enough, I'm like, there's probably a bit of an unmet need there. And I think... You know, I tie back to, like, you know, what I can control, and I think about my own upbringing a little bit, and, you know, you kind of not having a voice and things of that nature, and I guess being a dad as well, trying to make it normal in my home environment for my boys to ask for their needs to be met, and trying to, I guess, tease that out a bit, and then trying to see, well, how can I apply that in the workplace, because I'm in a position of influence,
right.
And so, like, how does that normal...
Do you smack your children?
No. Yeah.
It's a bit of a change. Were you hit as a kid?
Pardon me?
Were you hit as a kid?
Yeah.
Times have changed, haven't they?
Well, and if you remember, for the majority, and I always think back to when missionaries wrote about Māori and Pacific children and the strangeness of how parents would raise them with hugs and kisses and tell them that they were loved, and that it went against the biblical teachings.
Yes.
What is it? Spare the rod, save the child.
Right.
Something like that anyway. And that 200 years later, man, have we done a good job of doing the complete opposite of what we did well. Mm. And now, of course, you've got campaigns that say very things. Was a Māori and Pacific fan of, you should be embracing your child. You should be loving them, hugging them, kissing them. So, you know, in a way, James, I always think it's odd to me how things that were considered the norm, say like hitting your child, was actually then, but it wasn't always the norm.
Mm.
And this isn't romanticising Māori and Pacific history. There's lots of great examples of in academic literature that supports this. One of the other things I was going to very also quickly say to support Chris's stuff is I do think men and women talk and communicate differently, right?
Absolutely.
So for many men that I work with, their way of expressing love might not be to use the word love, but they, for example, I know a couple of guys that are scaffolders. They work insane hours. There's a couple of them that live in Wellington, right? And their form of expressing love is doing, you know, maybe 9 to 15 hours on a shift, working way up until 7 or 8 o'clock at night. It's cold, it's wet.
Mm.
I know this because they tell me this. But, you know, as long as there's money that's being earned, food on the table, and kids have their school uniforms, that's more than enough for them. I also know their partners want to be told that they're loved and have their men talk to them using affectionate words. But, you know, to them, that's not something that's their norm. I think that's something that has to be learnt and or allowing space to be able for them to communicate this
this
way.
How do you recommend your staff prioritise their mental health and reduce the stigma surrounding discussing emotional issues?
Yeah, I think for me, I think leading by example, and I think really being authentic about my own mental health and well-being is kind of my starting place. You know, being I guess being in leadership is, it's, I'm not going to sugarcoat it, like, you know, we, there's this power dynamic, yes, whether you like to acknowledge it or not. When you're in a position like that, there's a power imbalance, and so part of it is thinking about how do I give some of that power away, and what that looks like is just empowering others to...
That's interesting, because a lot of people accumulate power and absorb it and want more of it and don't want to share. Yeah. That's why some people aren't very good at, what do you call it, at divesting themselves or branching out and offering, you know, other people the road to power.
Yeah.
Have you found that?
Yeah, oh, definitely, 100%. And, you know, I think in this day and age where we are talking about mental well-being and emotional health and things of that nature, and it's coming into the workplace, which is a great thing. I think people can sniff out straight away whether you're authentic about it or not.
Yeah.
And I think it's, people are not stupid.
There are a lot of people out there in this space who are quite disingenuous.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I wanted to go back to is we talk about communication and men being bad communicators. And this is where I think you, Alexander, come in and say we're different communicators. Mm. I get sick and tired of people telling men they're no good at communication and they're not put up how we should communicate, you know? And in actual fact, some people's methods of communication is to hit, you know? Some people's communication is to shout. And where does that come from? It comes from being frustrated, being insecure, being... You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Although, to be fair, we don't condone this, but what we're saying is that, absolutely, one of the things that I also know is that people that I work with, irrespective of gender, sometimes don't have the vernacular to be able to describe what's happening.
The and vocab.
Or the vocab, that's a great example of being able to describe what's happening for them.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's only natural then you're going to have a lot of repressed emotions and anger. Just last week, I was dealing with some individuals around this very topic. You know, that they've been told that they're angry, but anger doesn't convey what, you know, is happening to them. And so I spent the session actually going over other words like rage, anger, being PO'd, you know, or every other word, until they actually realised that what they were feeling wasn't anger, it was actually trauma, hurt, and rage.
Yes.
And they hadn't had the opportunity to kind of utilise this, you know.
Yes, it's one of the most frightening things, I think, for some men is that they do have to connect with or communicate with women.
Yes.
And women have much more access to language and vocabulary, as you were pointing out about vocabulary being really important, that it almost stumps men, some men, you know. How do you feel? Good. You know, how do you feel? Well, you know, it's been... You know, the difference between a man and a woman in terms of, you know, we can... Men can sit together for 3 hours, not say anything to each other, and leave thinking they had a great time. Whereas women... They gossip and they, I know it's a generalisation.
Well, gossip could be as another form of intercommunication, right?
It is.
But I do think, though, that when I think about our men, I think about brotherhood, I think about the kind of men that I associate with. So in Hamilton, I've got my Mahake group. Up in Auckland, I've got my Stan group, you know, of other professional men where... And you're right, sometimes we can just say absolutely nothing, and then sometimes we can talk. I have to say to you, though, James, you know, that one of the things that I've noticed within these groups, you know, as we've gotten to kind of know each other better over the years, is that we're much more open about what's happening in our worlds. And then as that brotherhood has been able to grow and thrive, we've then been able to... support each other and find a way forward.
It's a wonderful thing to have a brotherhood. It is. I belong to a men's group, and nothing is off limits in terms of discussion. Respect is paramount. Anonymity is paramount. Those things are really important. But you very, very seldom, you might be different, Alexander, but you very seldom get communication between men that is deeper than how the All Blacks are doing or how the Warriors are going. Yeah. Or, you know, I know it's a stereotype.
Don't the Warriors do an awful job? That's it. That's all I know, apparently, based on what I heard the other day.
You've got it.
When I was in Westfield.
I'm glad you clicked on that soundbite.
I don't know what it was, but apparently they did an awful job. And I remember smiling and thinking that's probably the best communication line I've ever heard because it conveyed so much. Yeah. But it's true. I mean, if you kind of followed on from what you were asking, Chris, you know, standing tall, I have four tāne that I support, and they have other work that they do because it's not their full-time gig. And there's things like there's legal requirements to look after your staff and their wellness, and then there's just being a good citizen and actually checking in and asking how they are.
As a boss, Chris, would you entertain someone who came to you for a job who disclosed mental health issues?
That's a great question, actually. So there's one aspect of being a decent person, and there's the human side of things. There's also, I have legal obligations and contractual obligations too, and it's a tension I have to balance. Mm. So, I've been in situations like that, having to weigh up, you know, it's not just thinking about the individual per se, but the whole team and the flow-on effects of that and my obligations to the team and the environment and how it would affect everyone. And I think you got to weigh up every case on its merits.
Yes.
And it's not only me making a decision on my own, but relying on my co-leaders too. So yeah, I don't think there's a black and white answer for that, but it's certainly things that I've certainly come across those situations and had many things to take into considerations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like not everyone's, I guess, exposed to being a boss or being a leader and the things that we have to consider at that level, you know, is quite vast and quite deep. And so it's not black and white.
Mm.
I know that's not a direct answer, but it's a hard one to actually say.
It is a hard one.
Yeah.
It is a hard one because I have never admitted or disclosed to a prospective employer that I have mental health issues for the very simple reason that if you've got two people in front of you of similar skills, similar experience, the one who is going to be opted out is going to be the guy, this is the perception anyway, is going to be the guy who has mental health issues, let alone if you say you're schizophrenic.
Yeah.
You know, all the baggage surrounding that label is quite considerable.
I think just what comes to mind is, so someone's had a certain struggle, we've all had different struggles, but maybe this one's been a diagnosed mental health issue. Like, I'd be curious to know, like, well, how did you handle that?
Yeah.
What strategies have you put in place? What would you do if it comes up again? So it's asking lots of questions to see how they're managing.
How they're managing.
You know, if some people, and then it's just like, well, how would you like me to handle this situation if this comes up?
Yes.
So it's asking for permission. So there's different ways that you can navigate that conversation. And yeah, nobody's perfect.
Some of my clients ask me, James, this in therapy, if they should tell a prospective employer. And obviously my job is to sometimes reflect back what they're saying. And then there's sometimes where I won't reflect, just kind of give them a direct answer.
Yeah.
Which is, and so when that particular question comes up, I say to people, which one is going to reduce the amount of stress that you're going to have? You know, if you tell someone that you've got something and they employ you, at least they know what they're working with, other than that kind of sometimes paranoid or anxiety that you might have of, will they find out, or if you will become unwell. One of my closest friends, although we don't have, you know, contact now, one of my closest friends, that was his constant question all the time, should he tell people that he had schizophrenia? Because when he was good, it was great.
Yeah.
But on the odd time where he had to, say, change his medication, he might have had an off day, then it might take a couple of weeks, you know, for him to kind of come right.
Mm.
And I'd often think that... he, in his example anyway, he told his employers that he had had schizophrenia, and to their credit, they still took him on. And even though they didn't quite know what all that meant, they knew that he had a support structure, they knew that he had family that loved him and wanted to support him when he was unwell, and they gave him, you know, time off, and when he bounced back, you know, the way that he did it didn't require so much energy. Do you know what I mean? Because he didn't have to worry about what everybody else thought, because he knew that he would be okay.
Right, right. Kia ora, everybody. I'm James King. This is a Back Chat with James King on Free FM. I have my guests, my resident expert on issues to do with health, Dr. Alexander Stevens II.
Kia ora.
And also Chris Hennessy, husband of a woman.
Yes.
Father of three.
Alexander got a bit bored.
I know, I was going to say, who we? Yes.
So, yes, father of three and GM of McNaughton Windows and Doors. Very interesting to have a discussion about men's health and well-being this morning. Now, we've chosen a track here from Brooke Fraser.
Called Therapy, which is a beautiful irony.
Like an echo in my mind. There's a hunger that grows to the ground from the deep inside. Tasting what I couldn't see. Yes, a bit, but I found in the end that it consumed me. It's a lot of my heart. It's all out of my.
Indeed, that was Brooke Fraser with Therapy, and this is a type of therapy, this show today. It's therapy in the terms of talking about men's health and well-being with Dr. Alexander Stevens II and Chris Hennessy discussing the issue. Alexander, what are some myths and misconceptions about men's health that you've encountered in your practice?
That men don't worry about their health, that's a false narrative. I think men do think about their health, but don't necessarily want to do something about it. Those are two separate,
right?
You know, topics. Yeah. I think men do have a lot of anxiety and a lot of fear about getting something sorted.
Mm.
One of the things that I shared to Chris this morning as I was coming, as we were coming down here to Kerikeri or Hamilton, was that I've had a few clients, you know, pull their shirt up or pull their pants down and go, hey, what do you think of this lump, this mole? And I've said to them, this is not what I'm a doctor of. I did not want to, nor do I have an interest in specialising in this. However, I've also said to them, if this has been on your mind, then you need to go.
Yeah.
And I think it's one thing to tell someone to go to the doctor, then it's actually something to support people. So it's not... it's not an unnatural thing for me to actually advocate or go with someone to their doctor. I could think of someone that had a massive cyst the size of my fist.
Mm.
So what is that about the size of, say, a cricket ball in their shoulder? It was a wow. huge mass that they were absolutely concerned about, but didn't know or didn't want to know whether it was cancerous or not. And thankfully it wasn't. So yes. they went to the doctors. Had it surgically removed, and now they don't really think about it, other than a scar that they occasionally see if they're, you know, in the mirror. So, you know, I think that's one of those kind of myths out there that men don't really think about their health. I think that they do, but they just, like I said, they don't communicate it in a way that perhaps other people might see as conducive. Another good example, I think, is men want to get help but just don't know how.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of, as you know, James, I do a lot of therapy. I go from Taupo to New Plymouth to Tauranga.
You do too much.
Well, that is true. I'm not going to lie. But do you know why, though? Because there's very few Māori and or Pacific therapists in the country, full stop, that want to work with men.
Yeah.
And so my practice goes from Taupo to New Plymouth, Tauranga, all the way up to the Hokianga, so all the way up to the top, right? And often if I'm working with, say, a man, what will often happen is that he'll talk about his experiences of what he got from therapy, and then it's like a snowball effect. Sometimes two or three people will come out of that one individual's conversation also wanting to get help.
Where do you draw the line, though, Alexander? Well, because you're one person.
Yeah, this is my challenge that I work with on a weekly, and you know this, James, because we talk about this, but you know, at the moment I see 51 people. Plus, I have a full-time job at AUT University.
Yeah.
One of the things that I'm hoping to have back on the... two people, I should say, which are my mentees, you know, Sil Nefi now and Irie Thomas, are sparkling individuals that are fledglings in the health sector that I'm hoping to monarchy or support them to become health practitioners in their own right. But that's a long-term gain. So... It's hard for me, James, when someone rings me, for example, last week's great, and say, look, you know, my 35-year-old son's in bed, he's feeling suicidal, and, you know, I can't think of anybody else. Well, he's tried to talk to other people, but he hasn't been able to connect. Would you take the time? I mean, that's a really hard topic for me to turn around and go, well, currently I'm in Northland,
right,
or I'm in the North Shore up in Auckland, and I don't have the time. Of course I'm going to make the time, so... You know, I think one of the things I think about with my own health is my own limitations, but also recognising, like I said, you know, from a university's perspective, you know, we know that the amount of men coming forward in these kind of professions is rare, and I do wonder whether or not we're actually doing what we can to actually support them through the academic system first and foremost, and whether or not we're actually allowing them to strengthen their own resilience so they can actually come out as good, safe practitioners.
So how do you stay informed of the latest research, and what are the trends in men's health?
Well, it's one of the most beautiful things about working in a university is you're kind of bombarded by all kinds of stuff. Depending on my interest, right, so one of the things that's come out is the Royal Commission report, which will hopefully be out this week. There's a 2,000-page report that's looked at all the people that have been sexually abused in government, you know, services over the years.
Yes.
I'm really interested, because that's one of my areas, right, is sexual violence recovery. Then there's mental health, addictions, financial capability, are the top four often for me. So whenever I'm thinking about... working with them, I mean, I'm always drawing on kind of my latest academic research. And like I said, working at a university is quite helpful in regards to that. One of the things, though, I think that we do need to do better in is actually disseminate the information and have it available for everybody, because I think that's where a lot of those, what do we call them, James? I don't tend to hang out with them. The anti... people that always come up with like some nugget of truth and then expand it into a false narrative.
Yeah.
I actually think that we, as a university, I do think we need to disseminate information more regularly that's attainable, but also helps to break it down so that people can understand, you know, how what did we do to get to this information, what did it involve, and actually how does it impact on you?
Knowledge is everything, isn't
yes.
it? With respect to the Royal Commission, there are vested interests, and I don't want to be conspiracy theorist about the whole thing.
The very people I was thinking about, actually, but go on.
Yeah, but I wonder if these Royal Commissions actually do get to the bottom of what has been done and who's responsible and how they've become responsible and those sorts of things. Mm. And given that there's been a whole bunch of people who have settled their claims against the historic claims, to have the process continuing to develop where they're talking about spending hundreds of millions of dollars on compensation, it will be very interesting to see how they navigate that.
I mean, one of the things that I think about with that specific area of men's health is you're right, you know, I've been working with clients, those that have aren't sure whether they should take some compensation now or those who are prepared to fight the long fight. I always think, which hill are you going to die on? You know, sometimes some people just don't have the energy. If they were abused, say, 30 or 40 years and they've carried it for that amount of time, depending on their energy level, sometimes I think, actually, I just want to take this amount of compensation and just do whatever I want with it. Others are like, no, I'm going to hold, you know, specific people and or organisations accountable. I want to make sure that my experiences are seen, heard and valued. And even then, with those individuals, I just think, yep, but if you've got high blood pressure, you've got heart failure and you've got some other challenges, then actually what's going to be the impact? You know, it's one thing to leave a legacy, but I also think it's another thing to kind of leave the world too soon because of this kind of enduring stress. And some of the, and actually, you know, most of the guys I'm working with on those particular instances, unfortunately, do have compromised health because of what they've gone through.
How do you think mental health issues are masked or hidden? And what are the consequences of not addressing the problem?
If we looked at the building industry, that's a great example of areas that have been, I mean, in some instances, I was saying to Chris, it's great that he's actually here. So we know that suicide rates have been traditionally high within the building sector. Addictions can also be too, depending on the field. I'm just thinking about, you know, recent introductions are an increase in more things like urine testing, for example, to try to, to get workers compliant with what's happening.
Yeah.
As we've discussed before, you know, men generally speaking, you know, do communicate differently, and differently doesn't have to mean wrong. Different is different, right?
That's right.
And so how do you express what's happening if things aren't going your way, if you haven't traditionally had a way of being able to express yourself? A couple of weeks ago, you know, I've got a new person who is very much struggling using new words because they haven't had the opportunity to actually learn what they are. However, if you were if they kept, you know, some of my clients keep a mood diary because I asked them to, and they discuss how their body is reacting, you know, it's a good way of them being able to do like a word association. So, for example, if you're noticing that you're turning red and you can see your vein pop out of your head, then that's a good example of rage or frustration, right?
Indeed.
If you can't, if for example you're silent and you don't want to say anything because you're afraid of peeing yourself off or somebody else off, that could be what we call passive aggressive, or it could be a way of trying to avoid confrontation or avoiding conflict. We have to kind of expand on that, but you know.
Yeah.
Can I also say to you though that it's not all bad. Actually, I commend every male that comes forward to want to get help is sometimes in itself an act of bravery.
Yes.
And sometimes the reality is I might only see them twice.
Right.
Because sometimes, and I have to emphasize sometimes, not always, sometimes they actually realize that, or they've had some epiphany, or they've had a light bulb moment. And then they might disappear again, and I might not see them, or they might contact me a year later, because just in that moment, they've had a realization that actually things really are, you know, not, they're not going swimmingly well.
Yeah.
Regardless, though, every time I get, say, an email, a text, or other way of communicating, hey, you know, I need help, I think, good on you, mate, for wanting to come forward.
Absolutely, yeah.
What would you add to that, Chris?
Oh, yeah, I sort of come back to, like, teaching our boys from a young age to be able to articulate it and making it, encourage them to have the right language to be able to speak up when they need to. So I think it starts there. It starts in the home,
it does.
For sure.
It does, yeah.
But I think also in the, you know, Alexander touched on the construction industry, I think also taking people where they're at too, you know, we all communicate differently, you know, even, not only just men and women, but when you boil it down to individuals too. So I think it's understanding your team, understanding who you work with. They might communicate in a way that is indirect. Mm. And so it's picking up on those cues. And I think if you're in a position of responsibility or influence, I think that's part of your obligation to actually know who you're working with and actually try and pick up on those things and be proactive, whether that's checking in or whether that's just reading the room.
Yeah.
So I think there's, people who are in positions of responsibility need to have a bit of self-awareness.
Yeah.
I myself get supervision too to try and...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think that's helpful too because, you know, self-awareness is important, but nobody's completely self-aware.
No.
We all have blind spots. And
we
so,
do. Well, I don't, but you do.
Well, I mean, one of the other things, James, I was thinking as I was listening to Chris, and, you know, I do counselling with couples that go through family courts. Yeah. And one of the things that I do say to them sometimes, because sometimes, depending on context, you know, it can be a real character assassination. But when you're doing it in front of your kids, you really are limiting you know, their ability to be able to look at both of you with that kind of genuine aroha. And I do think, though, you know, having worked with thousands of men over 20 years, that it really does start from the home and it really does start from the family. And if you're able to nurture, you know, children from their outlook on life is much more likely to be less burdensome on themselves and other people. One of the things I've also said to you, James, which is kind of my gen, because I'd like to, I think it's 7 generations ahead, I'd love to see my role being redundant so that I'm not having to look at all these different detriments of health. I'd love for us to look at other things.
Yes. We've got another track here.
Benny Tepenny could be a relative. If you are, let me know.
Maybe we could go somewhere, it's just the two of us. She was just thinking. Maybe I see us as something in the future. I was just thinking. This is where love comes from. This is
about us. And I need you close. And I need you close. Cause baby, you know that this is where love comes from. 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 Healing up. This is where love comes from. This is where love comes from. Healing up.
That was Benny Tippany. This is where love comes from. Great little track there. We're talking to Dr. Alexander Stevens II and Chris Hennessy about men's health, mental health, physical health, communication, all of those sorts of things. Let me talk about standing tall. I don't know that we actually do talk about it every month, but tell us what standing tall is.
So a quick plug. So Standing Tall supports Māori and Pacific men who have been affected by childhood sexual abuse. It also supports people who get a disclosure and have absolutely no idea what to do about this disclosure. And it also supports community services that might get one of our men to disclose. And actually, how do we support them? Mm. So it's the only service that we know of in the country that actually supports all three population groups using kaupapa Māori approaches.
Right.
Full stop.
Full stop, period. And on that website, you will find what?
You go online. So it was a finalist for the Best Marketing Awards, little plug.
Stop it.
I know. But can I also say it was part of my PhD thesis, so I'm telling you this because it's all been, but you know, the academic research. Ringer. So it wasn't just, oh, here's a nice idea, we'll put this website together. Actually, it was 7 years of blood, sweat and tears looking at making sure that we've got this right. So you'll find information, the kind of common questions that our bros, and I use the word bros because I don't like the words victim, that our bros will often want to know about their own experiences and how to find a way forward. Same deal with support people, same deal with community services. The other thing, of course, is that we have the podcast, which includes the stuff that we do with you, James.
Yes.
And there's also 0800 numbers with organisations that we trust, like Lifeline, for example. Mm. You know, great organisation. Places like the Mental Health Foundation, because actually they do some incredible work in this country as well. And then also other crisis lines around the topic of sexual abuse. So, you know, we're really clear to stay in our own lane, and we're clear where we can't support, here are other opportunities. So, yeah, it does really offer a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a great website. I've been on it many times. You may surprise you, Alexander. I have looked at it on a number of occasions, and it is a very, very good website and very helpful, and long may it continue.
Thank you.
Is it funded?
It's a charity service, although we're not charity, in that we work for people for free, because coming back to this men's health, you know, it's just not appetizing to support male services.
When you say free, I'm in.
Although you really should, yeah, well, that's lovely, but then I always say double check, you know, people register practitioners, so on and so forth.
Well,
but the reality is we get a few community grants,
right.
But the reality, a lot of it is aroha based.
Yes.
For two reasons. One, like I said, you know, this is an area that people want to jump to and support. And secondly, there's just something about, you know, men who have been sexually abused, it's just not appetizing in terms of funding proposals. Having applied for many funding over the years, there's always a perception that men are offenders.
Yes.
Never victims. Or the other thing, which my mentee Sione experiences, you know, you get feedback which says the overwhelming evidence is that women are abused, not men. And so we don't dispute that. We have no interest in disputing that. But what we're actually saying is two things, whether you like it or not, boys and men do get abused.
Yeah.
They also need to get help. And you know, that our males and females and everyone else in between is part of a whole collective.
Yes.
And so when we don't or choose to ignore one side, we're actually letting everyone down.
Yeah. Fatherhood and being male and what would you say are the qualities of a good father are? Chris?
Oh, gosh, okay.
We got 5 minutes.
I think someone who's present and engaged with their children, like intentionally, I know, and recognising the different ages and stages and the differences between your kids too. So I think connection is foundational, because you got to know your kids in order to understand, and you know, the things that they need, how they tick. So I think presence and connection is really important. I think for a father particularly, you know, I think we can all agree the affirmations, the encouragement, or lack thereof, of the significant male figure in your life shapes how you view yourself and how you view the world.
Mm.
So I think being aware of the things that you say, whether big or small, they have massive impacts.
Yes.
I mean, I've got exclusively boys, and I, from my own experience, for me having lack thereof or in place of those things, you know, being labelled or teased or bullied, or, you know, yeah, like that can really affect you later in life and affect your health, per se, and how you communicate or don't communicate.
Absolutely.
All the things that we sort of have spoken about in this interview,
yes,
like that all started somewhere.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I think connection, presence, just the weight of your words is really, yeah, important, and just what you model as well, you know, like, you know, if you communicate about your what you're feeling and needing in certain situations, reflecting on your day to your kids, they will do the same, because they will catch those things and learn how to articulate what they're feeling, what they're needing, and all the different things that come with that. So yeah, those are just a few things that come to mind.
Beautiful, yeah, beautiful. What about you, Alexander? What do you think?
Yeah, so look, I have an ambitious goal to write as many academic journal articles as possible over the next 12 months. One of the things that I want to focus on is very much men's health. Looking at those areas, like I said, so sexual violence, recovery, mental health, addictions, financial capability. And one of the things I think is something that's become more of an interest to me is looking at things from a solution-focused approach.
Mm.
Like actually, for example, understanding experiences of dads raising respectful, healthy sons. You know, what are the benefits when we start working as a collective and stop approaching a separatism approach of, yeah, women are this and men are that? And, you know, and acknowledging, like I said, that we were actually part of a bigger spectrum, and that it's only when we look at it from a wholeness approach do we have any chance of finding a way forward. So that would be more stuff that I want to, you know, kind of do from an academic perspective.
Mm.
Because lots of research tends to put out men in a very negative kind of way.
Yeah.
Negative health stats, right? Whereas I think actually let's look at what is working and what can we do to build our strengths on it.
Absolutely. And so give us your Standing Tall website again.
Yeah, sure. So if you or somebody else has been affected by sexual violence at Māori or Pacific in particular, head on to our website, which is standingtallnz.org.
Dr. Alexander Stevens II, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Thank you to you, Chris Hennessy, and I wish you all the best with you and your kids and what have you, and let's hope that you get a daughter at some point. At some point.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's the end of the program for another week. You've been listening to Back Chat with James King on Free FM. I'll catch you next week. Until then, keep talking. They tell me it's healthy.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.